Hi, pals. It's me, Duncan, and I think I'm reaching my final form. I've recently become obsessed with landscaping and gardening. I started mulching all of these old dead flower beds around my house, and I gotta tell you, man, I've never done heroin, but if heroin is anything like putting down mulch, then send me some heroin, because I love mulching. Mulching is the answer. If I could, I would put mulch everywhere. I would cover Antarctica with mulch. I would put mulch in most of the ocean, leave just enough to go snorkeling. It smells good and it's glorious. I just love to mulch. That's where I'm at now. I went to this meditation retreat and in Hawaii recently, and I've been thinking a lot about it and trying to articulate some kind of distillation of what I learned at this most recent meditation retreat, and I got nothing, man, outside of the fact that right now I really just enjoy being outside and putting down mulch on things. That's what I got out of it, and maybe that's the final realization for me in this incarnation. Maybe that's it for me. I'm not saying there's not higher levels of understanding. Clearly they must be. But I would imagine that somewhere in the path of the Buddha's realization, and I forgive me if it seems like I'm comparing myself to the Buddha, I don't mean to be, but I would imagine that as the Buddha was gaining enlightenment, there must have been some tiny little pixel inside of him, just some little flickering piece of understanding obscured by all the other massive, grand, universal realizations. We're all one, sure. Everybody's one consciousness, sure. Love is the most important thing, sure. Everything is nothing, but nothing is love, fine. But I bet somewhere in there, somewhere, in some tiny little way, he thought to himself, mulching is as good as it gets, man. Putting down wood chips onto that which was dead. Just watching the instantaneous transformation that happens to an old dried up clump of just brittle old dirt, just bad cat litter looking dried up dirt. When it suddenly turns into a sweet bed of that brown glory we call mulch, then the world gets a little better. That's my spiritual epiphany from this meditation retreat that I went to. And sure, I could try to make this whole mulching thing some kind of obvious metaphor for the spiritual path. We're all dried up, dead flower beds, and the Dharma or wisdom or the understanding that you can be reborn in any moment is the mulch that transforms that which was dead inside of us into some brand new thing, and that the flowers that grow from the mulch of wisdom that we have scattered upon the dried up dead carcass of our former selves is what makes the world a better place. But I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know for certain that mulching is the way. Mulching is the middle way. Guys, we've got a great podcast for you. Jonah Ray is our guest today, and I didn't mean to make that rhyme, but he is a really cool person. I'm very excited to upload this interview. He's got a lot of amazing things going on for him, man. He's the new host of Mystery Science Theater 3000, which, if you aren't aware of this show, please immediately look it up. It's such a great show, and for a lot of us, it was one of the great shows, one of the shows that, for whatever reason, impacted us in our comedic understanding. It's a great show, and it's really cool that he's the host. He's also the host of another brand new show, which is coming out on CISO, which is NBC's internet appendage. This show's called Hidden America. It's kind of an Anthony Bourdain parody. And anyway, but aside from all that stuff, he's just a super cool guy. So I can't wait to for you guys to hear the conversation we just had. We're going to jump right into it. But first, some quick business. Not to spoil the conversation you're about to hear, but one of the takeaways that I got from chatting with Jonah was the very simple advice, which is just do something. Do it. Why not? whatever the thing is you want to do, just start doing it. And don't try to do it in its heightened, perfect form. Just do it as well as you can right now in the moment. And if you do that, you will get a kind of orgasm. You know, one of the many interesting things that Terence McKenna said was that he views people who've never taken a psychedelic or had a psychedelic experience in the same way that as virgins. Like, these are people who've never had an orgasm before. And in the same way, I think that if you've never allowed yourself to create something and put it out into the world, then out of fear or whatever, then you are keeping yourself from the kind of exhilarating, life-affirming beauty that is available to all people. You gotta puke out the God stuff from time to time, man. And I don't mean to intertwine that kind of metaphysical shit into a commercial, but Squarespace is a wonderful way to start self-publishing without having to spend a shit ton of money on a web designer. And who knows who these people are? You're gonna end up with one of these snarling dragons concealed as a mildly pudgy man who says he can build a website for you for insane hourly rates. There's a lot of fake web designers out there. They circle around the homes of all the creative people in the world. Did you know this is actually a horrifying trend that's been going on in some of the neighborhoods of the world? Is people have been putting out those wildlife cams and analyzing the pictures. And aside from all the various things that many people see in the backyards of America, grizzly bears, raccoons, apes, a lot of people have been seeing images of these fucking pseudo web designers who clamber out of their internet, Ethernet burrow holes and climb out of the Google complex. They shoot down these holes like the containers that get sucked into the bank machines, these suction tubes, and these tubes emerge into the yards of so many creative Americans, and they climb out like satanic hell moles, clamber up to your window and gaze in. And if it seems like you're in the market to build a website, they'll accidentally run into you at a Starbucks, pretend that they weren't living in your backyard, and they'll trick you into giving them tons of money to make a subpar shit website. And this is where Squarespace comes in. If you go to squarespace.com, you can avoid the mole people known as the pseudo web designers, and you can begin to actualize your creative idea in some way or another onto the World Wide Web. And sure, maybe the World Wide Web is very similar to the Amazon in the sense that it's a piranha-infested monster-containing demon stream that holds within it some of the angriest critics that have ever walked the face of this earth. Vile human beings who see a flower and it makes them spit bloody mucus at the cutest thing that they could find. Sure, it's out there, and anything that you put on the internet, more or less, there's going to be some percentage of people who treat it as though it were some kind of witch that just turned their cow's milk black. And so there's some fear involved in self-publishing, but there's something really exciting and fun about taking those steps in the direction of getting shit out into the world. And there's never been a better time in human history to do that, thanks to the internet. So if you want to start a nice do-it-yourself business, whatever it may be, I'm sorry I'm going a little long on this commercial, forgive me. I know someone who sells their socks online. I always say it, but I just want to really hammer that point home. If someone can sell their stinky socks on the internet, there's no reason that you can't sell some other stinky thing that you have on you or inside of you. And you don't just have to sell stinky things. There's a real possibility that that itching feeling you have inside of you about the business you want to start isn't just an imaginary dream, but is a thing that could actually not only make you money, but make you happy. And it'll make you feel like you're doing something. So give them a shot. Go to squarespace.com, use offer code Duncan, and you will get 10% off a beautiful brand new website They have everything you need. The website scaled to any kind of device that you're using, and they have built-in shopping carts so you can start selling stuff right away. And they also have great customer support, great online customer support. So they're a great company, and they're one of my longest patrons. And so I hope you will at least pay them a visit if you're in the market for a beautiful website. Go to squarespace.com, use offer code Duncan. You'll get 10% off. Also, I'm doing a show next week in New York. It's on June 2nd. It's at the Deepak Chopra Theater. I'll have links on the comment section of this website. I'm going to be doing a podcast interview. This is a series that the Ram Dass people are putting on. I'm doing podcasts with Pete Holmes and some Buddhists. And so the name of the event, which I really don't care for, is something like Comedy Meets Consciousness or something like that, which is fine, whatever, I get it. But the moment you add the comedy label to anything, the moment you add comedy or consciousness to anything, you create a kind of a variety of expectations for the what it's going to look like. And it's all rather embarrassing, but that's what they're calling it, Comedy Meets Consciousness. But I don't know that anything funny is going to come out of my mouth up there during the interview that I'm going to do. So, but it's going to be fun. That's the point. And it's going to be super cool. I just like having heavy duty conversations with people who are interesting. And I really love having conversations with people who are living a real spiritual path, because those people are to me seem so special. And quite often they say things that are instantaneously actionable in a person's life that can, in some way or another, they can add mulch to your old dried garden that you call your heart. All right, guys. Oh yeah, very quickly. We're also sponsored by Amazon.com. If you want to support the podcast, a great way to do it is go through our Amazon portal, which is located in the comment section of any of these episodes. If you do that, anything that you buy on Amazon, they'll give us a very small percentage of, and it's a great way to support the podcast. Costs you nothing, and it keeps you out of these terrible things that we call stores, because you don't want to go in those things. Not around Labor Day. Is that what we're having now, or Memorial Day? You don't want any day. You don't want to go to these things around any holiday or day at all. There's no reason to do it anymore. You can order anything that you need online and spend the time you would have spent driving through traffic to end up in some kind of dark, can-covered maze of doom outside, enjoying the beautiful rays of the incredible sun that floats somewhere out there above our very flat, very small, very young earth. Go through the portal. It's located at duncantrussell.com, and it's in the comment section of any website. Bookmark that portal and go buy yourself some plastic stuff. If you play video games, Dark Souls 3. If you like movies, sign up for an Amazon Prime membership. We also, in our shop, have just put in the You Are God Tour t-shirt. So for those of you who couldn't get t-shirts at any of the shows because we sold out or because we got screwed over by a t-shirt company that didn't give us the shirts we needed on time, they're now available at the store. I have a license. The image on there has been, I have licensed like 400 of them, and that's it. So once those run out, I don't know if we're going to keep making them, but maybe they'll let me license some more. I don't know. So get them now if you wanted to get a tour t-shirt. All right, guys, that's it. We're going to jump right into this podcast. As mentioned before, you're about to hear a conversation with the host of Jonah Ray's Hidden America, a very funny show that's going to be on CISO TV. And he's also the brand new host of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Everybody, please Turn your eyes in the direction of the vast cosmos that surrounds the flat earth that we live on, that earth which is controlled by reptilians. Send as much love as you can past the invisible metaphysical force field the reptilians use to prevent love from being transmitted into the cosmos. Bounce that love off of the moon and send it down to wherever Jonah Ray may currently be inhabiting. Please welcome to the DTFH, the magnificent Jonah Ray. Jonah Ray, welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Man, I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you.
You're somebody when I'm thinking of like guests that I'd like to have. I always think of you, and then somehow I never reach out, or it just hasn't happened. So thanks for coming up here.
Thanks for having me.
Man, one thing I want to ask you about is Hawaii.
Yeah, you just were there.
I was just in Hawaii.
What island, though?
Maui.
Okay, never been.
And you're Oahu.
Yeah, Oahu. Yeah.
Now, how far away is that from Maui?
I don't know, probably 45-minute, hour and a half plane ride. I don't know. I never went.
How many years did you grow up? Were you in
Hawaii? I was there until I was 19.
So you were just, fuck it, I'm going to stay on this island.
Well, what are you going to, it's more of the same in a way. You know, it's if you talk to people who are from Hawaii, they, you know, I went to Kauai because my dad like won a competition at work and they like sent us on a vacation to Kauai.
What work?
He worked for his dad's company. It was Kaimuki Plumbing. They put plumbing and pipes into houses and housing developments. And then like they had this like thing within the union, the Pipers and Fitters Union. And my dad won.
Won a trip to Kauai.
Kauai for his family.
Where'd you stay?
We went all over. We stayed at the Princeville. We stayed like in some like Poipu Beach. And I remember when we were there, that's where I saw Terminator 2. Judgment Day. So it was a good trip.
Wow.
I had that and I had the Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey soundtrack on repeat on my Walkman.
Wow. That's so cool. Dude, so that's kind of shocking to me though. So people in Hawaii, I guess you're just born in, you were born there?
I was born there. And so was my dad and his dad and his dad.
So you're just born into this beauty. You're born into the thing. And so.
You don't think about it that way though. People eventually do, but not for someone like me who wanted to do more or like started getting interested in things that would only happen on the mainland. It's like you start to kind of resent the beauty. And I remember I didn't appreciate it until I was going to the airport for like the last time where I was finally moving out and I'm going up the H3 over, you know, through the Ka'olau Mountains. And I was just like, oh boy, this place is insane. And I think about it all the time. There's nothing else like it. I'm sure you felt that when you were there.
Yeah.
It's very specific. It's very specific. It's not like any other, as far as I can tell, any other, you know, South Pacific islands. And it's just so isolated and so perfect.
Do you believe there's a metaphysical energy there?
I think you can't help but think there would be. Mainly just the thing is, though, it's like it's just that part of the, it has to have a certain feeling because you're never on that part of the globe anywhere else. You're never on that part of the globe,
right,
near that part of the equator, near in the middle of the biggest ocean in the world. So there's got to be a different feeling there than anywhere else. And I think that influences people's views on it and feelings.
Whenever I go there, it's the feeling of being buffeted by some kind of super positive, incredible energy. But whenever I go there, we do think Cora and I often fantasize about moving there, and then I think, well, this is a small town in the middle of the ocean that you can't drive out of.
That's how I've always described it. Every time people go, oh, must have been so great growing up in Hawaii, I said, take whatever kind of boring small town you're from, carve it out of the earth and put it in the middle of nowhere, you know.
Right.
it's like Hawaii, and then there's like, you know, Bakersfield. These are the two places, like if you carved out Bakersfield, you would get that.
Wow.
You know, and it's just,
and that's claustrophobic for a kid, man.
Yeah, especially as I started getting into music, I started getting into comedy. You know, also, like, you know, the music and comedy there, I mean, there was the punk scene, sure, but it was only ever that. Like, no one ever broke out, you know, of
the scene.
What's
the punk scene like in Hawaii?
It was every kind of punk, you know. There would be, a band that sounds like it was like a metal band, a ska band, like a gutter punk band, you know, and then guys with synths and stuff like that. Is anyone who was kind of on the phrase of independent music, they all played the same shows.
How would you describe the punk ethic? What is that?
Essentially, DIY. I think it's a do-it-yourself, and like, and that can, it could really be, punk rock can really be defined any way you want it to. But I kind of think of it as a, like a jam, like try to jam a Kano, as it, like the Minutemen would say, we jam a Kano. That means like, do it on your own, do it as the best you can. Like, you know, it's like, make sure it's stuff you want to do. Cause it's like, the more you let other people start to tell you what to do, the less, you're going to want to do yourself. Like right. I, there was a lot of times in my life where I, you know, in this career where I started working on something and it gave me money and I started following the money. And then a year down the line, I found myself very unhappy.
Right.
And then I started to think a lot about, like, you know, the bands I loved growing up and the, how, like, nobody knows who they are for the grand scheme of things. Even some of the biggest punk bands ever, like, to me, like, you know, Minor Threat, Ian MacKaye. Most people who ever existed will never know who Ian MacKaye
right,
is.
Right.
But it doesn't change the fact that it means so much to me.
Right.
So if that, then what? So maybe if I just focus on what I want to do and just do everything the way I want to do it, without trying to compromise anything for money or to have it be more popular or have it, me be more famous. If I focus on just the things that make me happy, then I'll be happy. And that's kind of my approach to punk rock in life. It's like, don't chase the money, you know, like makes my mantra to myself is make stuff, not money.
But you are, I mean, but you've pulled this off because you are making money. You're the co-host of Meltdown.
Yeah.
You are going to be the new host of Mystery Science Theater. Are you fucking kidding? And you have this badass new show on CISO called Hidden America. And so when you're talking about this punk ethic or somehow evading the tendency of whatever your idea is to get diluted whenever you get into a collaboration, especially a collaboration where there's a lot of money on the line for, like, you know, like when NBC throws a bunch of money at you to make a show, someone's taking a risk. Someone is. And so that means that there is a money-based collaboration that starts happening.
Sure.
How do you work around that?
Well, it's their risk. I've tried to establish, and I make no bones about how I, you know, want to do things the way I want to do it. And I, you know, the pilot for the show I have on CISO, I originally did that for another network that, like, a lot of our friends have, like, shows on. And, you know,
I say the network?
I'll say, I don't give a shit. True TV.
Okay.
So I made it for True TV, and the guy I was working with was great. He was this really awesome producer.
You made a pilot or the whole series?
I made the pilot.
Okay.
And, like, well, they asked for a scene. And they're like, we'll give you a couple bucks for a scene. And then me and the director guy were just like, let's just make the whole episode. Because in context, a scene wouldn't really work. It would just feel like a sketch when it's kind of this bigger idea of what sketch can do. And so
you know what, before you go on,
can you do
a synopsis of what the show is?
The show's called Hidden America with Jonah Ray. It is a Bourdain type travel log show parody. So essentially the places are real. I go all over the country, but everyone I meet is fake.
And you nail the Bourdain thing, man. You nail the Bourdain nostalgia.
Yeah.
That kind of like syrupy connection he has with everything.
Everything. No matter what. It's everything. And he's great. And I love him. I was like, the whole time
too.
I'm listening to his book. And it's just like,
he's amazing.
Just, yeah. It's like, you know, you'll never get a better glass of water than you will at this diner at this time of day.
Yeah. Yeah. You did a good job, though. It doesn't feel like you. It doesn't feel like you hate Bourdain. It just feels like you've definitely have apprehended his mood, and you've done a really good job of bending it in a comedic way. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, I'm really stoked on it. It's a lot of fun. We had a ton of great people working on it too. It was an idea I had for so long, and the thing that made me start working on it seriously was this Alan Partridge special called The Places of My Life, which is, you know Alan Partridge.
Yes.
Yeah. Steve Coogan's character. Well, he did a special, and I saw it, like, on the plane to London on my honeymoon, and I was just crying with laughter. And it was just this awesome special he did where it's just he's showing his town It's like welcome to the places of my life, and like he just, but it's so low rent and everything sucks.
It's
and like
really funny.
It's so good. I love it when he's just like he brags about going to the Land Rover lot to go and test drive Land Rover. That's like one of the things he likes to do.
Wow,
it's just so like I saw that and I was like, I should really do that idea I've had for a long time, which is almost a secret sketch show in that.
Sure.
You know, I talk to somebody and they're a character and I play straight man to them the most I can.
Do you not playing straight man, does that bug you at all? It seems like that's for a comedian, that's got to get annoying at times. I have a friend who's playing a straight man on the show and we talk about it and he's like, man, it's like really hard because a part of you wants to be the star of the scene and you're having to constantly give the spotlight.
Facilitate. Yeah. It's well, you know, some of my favorite, you know, performers have been straight men. Like Andy Daly, I think, is like one of the best straight men ever. But it doesn't take away from the fact when he does characters, he just destroys.
Yes, that's true.
I like the idea of being a straight man. You know, when Kumail and I perform on The Meltdown, it's kind of like we kind of trade off straight man tendencies. I don't know. I like it. I like facilitating because it feels like I'm helping. I'd rather facilitate the scene than myself.
What about the nightmare of not being able to laugh when someone's being really funny?
It's tough.
Yeah,
it's
tough.
It happens a couple times, like when I was doing the scenes with Brendan Small, where it's like he just kept on throwing stuff out, and I just have to act like I'm like wincing at what he's saying. You know, there's all those little tricks you can do where you kind of start to rub your eye like you're upset or something like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I found all these little tricks
to
do.
Where'd you find that? You just discovered them on your own? Or
Yeah. Like, it's like, you know, what else does your face do when it looks like you're about to smile? And you can kind of just, you just kind of turn your head.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was fun. And I don't mind it. But I also, like, there were times where, you know, the tricky part of it is like, because I have to stay at a certain level of straight madness in the show to drift around because all the characters are crazy. And I have to, you know, you can't have two crazy people in a scene because that's hat on a hat. And then you start to lose the idea of what the scene is or the sketch is. And also I have to connect all the scenes. So no matter how crazy stuff gets, I have to always be able to kind of bring it back in with some kind of interior monologue of or justifying the thing. So it always had to stay within some parameters.
You know, man, I watched the New Orleans episode. Don't want to spoil it. Very funny, but it has one of the funniest, and you threw you were the punchline, which was cool because is what the straight man's supposed to do. But you were the punchline in this incredible, like, it was a
which scene are you talking about?
Jew joke.
You know? Yeah.
I was thinking, my God, this is on NBC. This is an NBC
affiliated show.
Show, and they let you get that joke in. Did you have to fight for that?
No, I mean, that was the pilot, so I didn't have to clear anything with anybody. But once we did start writing stuff, they did back off. See, they were really good, barely any notes. Every once in a while, they would say, we don't want you doing that. And then I would have to kind of step up and go, here's why I want to do it. And also, notes are always an opportunity to kind of rethink a joke anyway.
Right.
I wanted to do this one bit in Atlanta where, I go to a store to try on like an old Union soldier, you know, costume just to see what it was like for those guys to fight the Confederates. But they don't have any Union soldier costumes in my size. And so they're like, I got one that'll fit you. And it's a Confederate soldier costume. And it fits magnificently. And I'm like, this is so nice. And the guy goes like, oh yeah, always the bad guys always had the best tailors. And I go, what more? Give me more. And it just like throughout like, you know, Nazi outfit feeling great.
That's,
you know,
great.
Like all these different like horrible things. And I'm just like sashaying in them. And it's we never got around to it because they were just like, you cannot be in
a Nazi outfit. So that's that was where the force field popped up.
And I could have pushed for it, but like the director guy, who was Troy Miller from like Fly the Conchords and Mr. Show and stuff like that. He was like, you don't want to like fight for that. Cause it's like, you're not Jewish and it feels weird after a while,
right?
You know, cause Sarah Silverman can do it. She's Jewish. Mel Brooks did it. He's Jewish, you know?
See that right there, that bit of gracefulness when it comes to negotiating with people on your team, that requires a lot of like swallowing your ego a little bit.
Oh, sure.
Because especially coming from a punk ethic, there's got to be a part of you that bristles at anyone telling you, what to do, right?
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. Like, there was one. The only one I really got mad at for that one, I get it. It's a little, you know, it's a little weird. But I wanted to have we were do this other thing in Atlanta, where this reverend is having a gun adoption thing, like a puppy adoption. So people just come and they just get guns for free. And he's like, if everyone has a gun, nobody has a gun. It's like the Cold War. You know, everyone had missiles, nobody. Yeah. And so like we wanted this thing where it's like a little kid like grabs like the biggest gun. It's like, mommy, I want this one. So it's like, are you sure you're going to take care of it? You know, just, you know, find and replace, you know, humor in that one. But they're like, you can't have a kid with a gun. I was like, well, I don't understand like what the big deal is. And like guns, right? And like, and there had just been a shooting. I mean, you know, throw a rock. But yeah. Like, it was just like, they're like, you just can't do it. And I was like, I mean, there's so many opportunities to fight when you're making something that you want to make. Yeah. And that was, if it, for me, the thing I would think in my head was, if it doesn't ruin the bit, if it doesn't take away from the main idea, then I don't care. I don't care. It's like, if it's one beat of a thing that has seven beats.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's, you know, I'll take it back and I don't mind. And you know, that like an LA episode, I say the F word and I say the N word. And
they don't care about that.
No.
But it's more of a political stance, yes, than it is to do with language these days. No one really cares, yeah, about language anymore.
No, it's starting to like, yeah, get a bit pushed. But yeah, it's all those kind of weird, like the gun stuff. Everyone's so sensitive about it. And, you know, I find it silly because in comedy, you should be able to be a joke around about it. I'm not saying like, you know, I'm an equal opportunity offender. You know, I'm not that kind of guy. But I don't see the big deal with it. I think it's just fear. I think you shouldn't really, it's like, it just, to me, it reeked of, you know, kind of this,
we just don't know, do we? Yeah. Because you're looking at like the, you know, NBC is a conglomerate of super wealthy people that, yeah, all contribute money to varying political factions, yeah, that all have things that they don't want their money going to promote. And that's where it becomes like so interesting and complicated. Sure. And who the fuck knows where the note's coming from or why. It's really weird.
Yeah.
And this is that strange dance when you decide to do anything with a big corporation. This, yeah, is the kind of dance that you have to get really good at doing. Either that or what do? You just...
Well, I think most notes when it comes to sensitive material are all based off of fear. And so if you try, right, to just explain to them, huh, the commentary and the humor of it, I think you can always massage it to in your favor.
Right.
Because it's, you know, people, that's like a response. Someone that, you know, someone that can't like, you know, make a sex joke in their office every day. We don't live in those offices. We don't have to care about that, right, stuff. We don't have to worry about HR department coming down on us.
Right.
So we have this more fluid way of existing in the world where these people are in these rigid corporate structures. And so they live in those structures every day. They're in those cubicles in those offices and they're in the, you know, the, yeah, kitchen area. And like, it's all very right angle world. And then they start to work on, with creative people and creative things, which are these globulous, you know, not rigid things.
Yes.
And so they try to squeeze it in and they try to make, you know, understand it, but they don't, and they can't, and that's fine because their whole world is just like ones and zeros.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Some of them, it does seem like that especially, well, I mean, it's just everyone's job. It's a job. Like you can get fired. You can,
yeah,
get, you're at some meeting and someone gets fucking pissed at you because you let Jonah Ray's, you know, do a goddamn Nazi uniform joke. Yeah, I get it, man. But it's really cool from what I saw. There's no fear. What I thought, it didn't feel constrained to me at all. It felt like it felt exciting to think that a network is letting this kind of stuff, thanks, emerge on the internet, and that's good news for all of us. That,
yeah,
hopefully things are loosening up and they're going to start taking more risks and move away from the whatever the awful constraints that come from having to put shows on TV, on that outdated,
yes,
media.
And it's all because it's coming not so much from the creative executives at these companies, but more so from the ad side of these businesses. It's like, you know, they have to worry about the commercials and they have to worry about the companies that are giving them money to make, yeah, these shows. But the further we get away from it, even, you know, when I worked at E and like G4, it's the fear that some of the creative executives had for just the people who set the schedule up. They're like, we tried to talk to them. They wanted on at 1 a.m. I'm sorry.
That shit drives me nuts, John.
Yeah, it's nuts.
I can't believe it. Whenever you get into whenever you come into contact with the force field and it emerges and you know this is an imaginary thing, you're worried about nothing. And in fact, these force fields are the thing that's fucking up your medium more than the content. And so, you know, it's because it's so easy to judge a show. Like, and I do it all the time. You watch a show on TV and you think, this fucking sucks. What a piece of shit, right?
Yeah.
You watch and you're like, this is an absolute atrocious abomination. And then you realize it's not the creators of the show who are the monsters here. They probably had a really good idea.
Yeah.
It's whatever filtration mechanism that creative idea had to go through that ends. It's like the opposite of a water filter, man.
Yeah.
It's like instead of having charcoal in your filter, it's like a nice chunk of dried shit.
Yeah.
That takes relatively clean water and makes it dirtier.
Well, anytime you have an idea, by the time you start saying, like, that idea is perfect. You think the idea is perfect. You start to tell somebody about it, it's already a little bit ruined.
Whoa,
you write it down, it's ruined even more.
Yeah.
You start to cast it, you shoot it, every step of the way, it's ruined. And then you get to editing and you're like, this idea I had was so great. And then that's like the only other time you have to try and fix everything else.
You know what it's like, man? You know those little turtles that, you know when turtles, they lay eggs in the sand and the little baby turtles go off into the ocean? And it's cute to watch this parade of beautiful young baby turtles. Turtles running down into the sea, and 99% of those things are going to get fucking eaten in the first like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's what these ideas are like. They're like beautiful, sweet, perfect baby turtles. And the moment they go running into the ocean, that is whatever your collaboration is, there's a good chance they're going to get eaten or mutated or transformed into something. So whenever I see something on TV that is funny at all, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's a miracle that happened.
That's the sperm that made it.
That's the sperm that made it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, man.
It's incredible. The more you make stuff, the more you realize, like, it's, you know, I just, I let stuff wash over me now. I don't get angry when I see something bad. I just kind of go, not for me, or that's okay. You know,
right.
I don't get angry at bad TV or movies anymore just because you understand the process is just someone trying to change it the whole step of the way. I mean, even though the director guy I had, Troy Miller, like, he's done so many great things. He has so many great ideas. Every once in a while, he's going to have a different idea than me.
Sure.
And then I'm going to be sitting in the edit bay going, I wish I had it. I wish I was able to get it my way. But it's okay. We'll figure it out.
It's weird, isn't it, that there's an entire group of people in the world that sits in front of their TVs or computer screens clenching their fists in rage over what is just a person trying to make something good.
Fuck them for trying. That's what they, you know, that's the feeling I get. Fuck me for trying, huh?
Yeah. What is that? Man?
I don't know. Last night I was realizing, I was like, man, I do remember we gave critics such shit for so long.
Yeah.
Oh, what are you, a critic? Oh, everyone's a critic, critic. It's like we just gave them shit for so long. Now I miss the days when critics were the only people that were educated enough to make comments on art.
Yeah.
Now everybody's able to.
Yeah.
Now a post about me on the AV Club goes up and I got to hear all these guys that look exactly like me just fucking destroying me, talking about how I'm the most unlikable, punchable person they've ever met.
Is this because of Mystery Science Theater?
I mean, that sure woke up the beast. That woke the many people.
I mean, that you crossed into the Temple of Doom when you were anointed.
Yeah.
I mean, that is he could have picked the Dalai Lama as being the next, and people would still be like, he's too old.
Yeah,
he's
too
old. Look at this fucking old Tibetan guy. He can't.
They would have found something.
Something, man.
Yeah.
So that, but, you know, growing up, that I have memories of, like, specific comedic events in my life that were just mind-blowing. And it was, you know, sadly, and now it's sad, it's the first time I heard a Bill Cosby album before everyone knew he was a Quaalude rapist.
That would have been a great anecdote just a couple years ago.
Now it's like, you didn't know that. I was a kid. It was like, I think that's the first time I heard stand-up comedy. I was like, whoa, this is fucking hilarious. It was when I saw the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Holy shit, man. This was, you know, like, you would double over laughing. And then it was Mystery Science Theater, where it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Two of the greatest things combining here. Someone is actually picked out the shittiest movies they could find, and they're making hilarious jokes about them.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's one of those shows that, like, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, these are the shows that have a very, like, and I think for a lot of us, that's maybe why people are being so protective of it, because this is a precious, precious thing.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, I would have, if it wasn't me, I would have been highly skeptical of whoever was picked. I mean, I tried to tell all the people that were giving me shit. I said, "How do you think I feel? I can't complain about the new guy. I don't have the opportunity to. But I do every day. You know, I complain about myself. But I really think it's still weird to me. It's still weird to me that it happened.
How could it not be?
It's like it's the one thing I wanted to do. It's like when I saw it as a kid, and I got obsessed with it, and I got the VHS tapes, and I had the shirts, and just
you're in deep.
Yeah, when Mike showed up, I was like, "Who the fuck is this guy?" And then I realized, I was like, "Wait, that's the guy that played Torgo in the Torgo's Pizza sketch from Mano's Hands of Fate."
Oh, wow.
Like, I loved it so much. And plus, it's like when I moved out to LA, one of the only VHSs I had was the Mystery Science movie. So I would put that on all the time. It was kind of a comfort thing. And, that movie, I would listen to it while going to sleep almost every night, just because I knew it so well. And it's just a nice thing to listen to.
How did it happen? How'd you get that job, man? What's take me from the beginning?
Well, I saw a genie and I had three wishes.
No, it does feel like the more I think about you as that host, it completely makes sense.
Thanks.
Man. But it does feel like this is something you always dreamed about.
Yeah.
And you did it. So to me, this some magic is involved in this somewhere along the way.
I don't even know how to really even fathom. I remember the first Hollywood-y type meeting I had. You know, I was doing improv, I was doing stand up, and then a guy says, "Hey, come in and meet with us." And that's one of those general meetings. What would the Duncan Trussell show be? What would it be? And you're just like, I just do an open mic because I don't know what to.
Right.
A comedy, and so I remember. But when they asked me, I said. And this was in 2002 or 2003. I go, I really think we should bring back Mystery Science Theater 3000 and I can be the host. And they all laughed at me. Little did they know nostalgia would be the number one moneymaker, over a decade later. But, it's what I wanted to do. And
but this meeting you had was not related to the thing that finally...
No, this was in 2003.
This is
you
throwing shit against the wall.
I knew it was gone. I wanted it back.
But you articulated the desire.
Yes.
Even back then. How long have you been doing stand-up comedy?
Since 2002, and that meeting was in 2003 or something.
So you've been doing comedy for a year, and you already had the balls to be I want to host one of the great shows. That's cool, man. You're a confident guy.
I'm not, though. It's just, that was just stupidity talking. That was just me going what would the generation be? Someone else's show.
Was it stupidity, or was it, because don't you feel like there's a piece of you even when you were in Hawaii? I don't mean this from a ego, a narcissistic place either, but don't you feel like you've always had this kind of crystal clear sort of weird sense that this was gonna happen? Was it
comedy as a occupation,
just that
or
feeling shit, man, something's gonna happen? I know, there's something that made you in the same way those little turtles go down into the sea. So there's something that got Jonah Ray to climb out of the comfortable nest of Hawaii and come to Los Angeles. There must be something in you that knew that this was going to happen.
Well, all I knew really is that I just wanted to have a career in comedy. It was a thing that made me the most happy growing up. And so the opportunity to be able to do that, I really think... most of what we do is almost throwing a pebble back in time to another younger version of us who might be listening to this right now going, "Oh man, yeah. And then they go on to do it. And what they do, they get to our point in the timeline and they throw it back. And then
that's
just
so cool.
I really think a lot of this stuff is time travel. Because of being obsessed with Mel Brooks and Weird Al Yankovic and Mystery Science Theater 3000, because of those things, I wanted to do comedy.
Yeah.
And then because I started doing comedy because of those things, I got to meet those guys.
Whoa.
And now I'm working with some of those guys.
Right.
It's very circular and it's
magic.
Yeah. It's
something
magic.
In it feels like some kind of magic. And I don't, yeah. I mean, like, not like, you know, like, it's magic. But, like, it feels like some, there's some kind of hidden force involved in all of this. And I know it's a lot of hard work, too. But
oh, sure. But, yeah, I mean, as we go along, it's nuts. It's, you know, I put in the work and it works out. And that's scary when things work out. And it's really frightening.
Acceleration is always frightening, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I don't like it. I was talking to like our friend Matt Dwyer the other day. And he's like, I kind of feel like I have momentum. I was like, don't ever feel like you have momentum. just be and just do.
Right.
And just don't think about
in
like
the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Please get in the moment and do that stuff. But I was talking to an old friend of mine that I grew up with. Like, we watched Mystery Science Theater together. We were in bands together and stuff like that. And he was kind of at a place where he's like a year older than me. And he's like 34, 35. And he goes, and he's like, just quit like another coffee shop job in New York. And he's like, what was the difference? What was like, we were into the same things. We were doing the same things. Why is this happening to you?
Yeah.
And like, what is it happening to me? And I was just like, I told him, I was like, I just did it. That's the only difference. I made the point of going to do
it. Right. And you said it. You said
it. I said it. I said, I'm going to go to LA and I'm going to go be a person in comedy.
And you said, I want to be the host of Mystery Science Theater. And you said it. And you said it out of stupidity.
Yeah.
I think you said it out of some kind of instinctual understanding that when you articulate things, sometimes they happen.
Yeah. I think it's a huge thing of just stating what you want. And I didn't for a long time. You know, when I first started doing comedy, you know, do you remember this? It's like, it was like kind of bad to say that you also wanted to act or do anything outside of comedy.
Yes.
Guys like David Taylor would go, no, you should only be wanting to do the thing, right? It's like, how dare you stand up as a stepping stone? Because in a way, it is a tiny bit disrespectful to the pure art of stand-up comedy to say, I'm doing this, but I also hope it will get me this other thing.
Can I just say that what I think is disrespectful to the art of comedy is for anyone to make any kind of fucking rule about why you should do it.
Yes.
I think that's the ultimate sin. It's like, oh, really? You're going to apply some kind of goddamn, I don't know, some kind of Old Testament style law to this thing, which most of us don't even understand why we're doing it.
Yeah.
Some of us are doing it in the same way my dog chews its paw when it's stressed out. It has to do it. It just does it as a form of sickness.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that this is so I mean, anytime I find myself applying any rule to, you can't do that. As a comic, you can never do that.
Yeah.
Anytime you hear that, it's generally the person who says it is going to be proven wrong, because comedy's like that. Remember those, well, I guess they're kind of like pocket pussies, but they used to sell them as toys at the toy store.
Like the balloons with water that the hole in it.
Won't let you hold it.
Yeah,
Any way you try to hold it, it squirms out of your hand.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's what comedy is too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, every time you think you got a handle on it, or every time you think like, once I do it this way, I got it, and you don't. And it goes back to people saying that out of fear. It's like they're scared that if you start saying, I want to do this, then they don't, and then it works out for you, and it's embarrassing.
Right.
Trying is embarrassing. Wayne White says beauty is embarrassing.
Whoa.
And it truly is.
Wow.
It's all vanity, and what you, like anything we do is only to try and perpetuate us as our beings right now, which are just like, and none of it matters. We're going to be dead and buried. Like, to think that like everything that's like important to us is still pop culture. Things, books that were written in the 1800s in the essence of the time of the world, that's still pop culture.
Wow.
You know, and to think that like we're desperately trying to like, you know, have a blip on a piece of dust of this part of time right now is narcissism, and it's vanity.
Yeah.
But in the end, that's okay, because that's all we got right now.
Wow.
So wouldn't it be fun if we just tried?
Yes, yeah. I agree. I think, yes.
Yeah.
100%, man. And the, but to get back to and I don't mean to like be shoehorning, is that how you say?
Yeah.
I don't mean to be shoehorning you into the role of some kind of wizard here. In general, I do think that there is I'm always interested in the component, the component that, I know the hard work.
Yeah.
Is a big part of it. And I saw this, I've gotten into archery lately, or shooting.
I saw those,
So I saw this.
It's got to be good for your breathing. Just because, isn't it all about focusing on your breathing? And it's almost meditative, right?
Interestingly, it's called instinctual archery. And what's really curious about it is that it's about not focusing on anything.
Oh.
The more you think about what you're doing, the more you fuck up. It's like hitting this strange place where you don't really know how you're doing it. And when I got some books on it and was reading about it, and all of them are just like, well, here's like the basics. Here's how you should stand. Here's the basics. But after that, if you think too much, oh, is my arm in the right place? Oh, is it? If you think about any of that shit, you're going to generally be off. So it's a really, you would love it.
No, that sounds great, because I'm a better bowler when I've had some drinks. So maybe that's kind of similar concept.
Bowling and archery, actually, and you'd probably be good at archery if you're good at bowling, because it's the same. I imagine it's a very similar kind of, even though bowling, it's all form.
Yeah.
There's an extra piece to it, right? Yes. Yeah. That extra piece is what I'm interested in, and just about everything, man. So, in archery, I looked up a video of this world famous archer. And a guy, like, he was making these insane shots, like crazy, crazy trick shots, like shooting arrows through PVC piping that goes through balloons that pierces a euro.
Jeez.
Like shit like that. And the guy he's with is like, that's a lucky shot. And the archer, I can't remember his name now, he says, you know what I've noticed? The harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yeah.
And I always think about that. It's really cool.
Yeah.
But I'm... What is the one meeting or thing that if you hadn't have gone to that meeting, or if you hadn't have done that thing, you wouldn't now be the host of Mystery Science Theater?
Well, if I'm to trace it back, I guess it would be, I had made a bunch of sketches with Peter Tencio and Neil Mahoney and stuff like that. Chris Hardwick, who we had known for, years just through stand-up, like he liked those videos a lot. He got a job hosting a show called Web Soup.
Okay.
It's like this, this stuff. It's all breaking ice.
It's the
all
butterfly these, wing, man. It's the flap of the butterfly that starts the hurricane. But it's fun to try to trace it back to the one thing if you hadn't have done it.
Yeah.
The one thing.
Yeah, so the one thing is coming up where it's, and then I basically... I had those videos and I was done and I had gone through a bad breakup, and then I decided I was going to start I was just going to get some kind of writing job on whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm going to get some health insurance. I'm going to, get a 401k and shit like that. And I was working on the show that I was miserable at called The Rotten Tomato Show. It was a TV show based off of the website, and I was just miserable and I wasn't doing anything I liked. I was barely doing stand up, nothing that creative, really. And then I get a email from Hardwick saying, "Hey, I just got this show, and like they're looking for writers, and they had actually seen some of your videos, and they wanted to know if you wanted to come in for a meeting." And I was like, "I don't know, man. Like, how long is it picked up for? Because I got this gig for a year, like a year of a steady paycheck, and that was the first time I was ever going to have something like that.
Right.
And it was kind of creative. And that's the thing you'll find when you do this job. It's like, you'll kind of take these gigs because it's like, it's kind of what I want to do.
Right.
And then you do it. And then it just starts to deviate slowly from what you really want to do. And then all of a sudden you got all this money, but you're so far away from what made you happy in the first place. And
don't you think, not to stop you, but don't you think that the other, God, do you ever read The Invisibles?
No.
Jesus Christ, it's so good. It's by Grant Morrison.
And, oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. And I was reading, there's a scene in it where the main character has been captured by these, like, Masonic occultists, and they have him tied up, and they're trying to basically get him to transform into, they're trying not only to, like, read his mind, but somewhere in this torture that they're doing to him, they say, we don't just want what's in your mind. We want our enemies to become our allies.
Oh.
We want you just to shift into seeing things our way.
Yeah.
And so on this path that you're talking about, when you get diverted, it's the real horrifying thing about it isn't so much dissonance that comes when you recognize that your path is that you're on is not the path you wanted to be on. It's when you start rationalizing then tricking yourself into this is the path I wanted to be on all along.
Yeah.
Even though that crystal clear part of you is always like, no, this isn't it.
You're
tricking yourself.
You know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to make you slightly unhappy all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like those guys you talk to that, you know, live back home or wherever, you know, just like, no, you know, things are good. Things are good. I'm getting some more hours at the factory and, she wants to have another kid. You hear that, you know, it's, and if you want that, that's fantastic. If you don't, you can hear it. They'll do like, things are pretty good. Like you hear like that swallow and that's them swallowing back down the thing they wanted to do so they can rationalize.
Oh my God. That's so fucking intense, man. But what do you recommend for people like that? Because this is the thing. I mean, let's imagine this person that we just manufactured, a person who has a kid, a person who has a full-time job and a kid they've got to take care of, and yet somewhere inside of them is that thing that you're talking about that wants to come out. What do they do, Jonah?
Any creative thing. I have like so many friends that are still in punk bands and they're in their mid-40s and they have kids and they still have their creative endeavor. They still go out and play shows. And I know it's tough, but then they all have jobs. It's very like, you know, Jam Akano, doing something creative doesn't mean you have to be a millionaire.
Right.
It's like, I like to consider, you know, myself not like a blue collar comedian, but like a blue collar entertainment person. Like I just work. I just want the work and I want to work on the stuff I want. Yeah. I want to make my wares. I want to shuffle into town. Yeah. I want to sell my spoons and bowls.
Okay. You know? That's cool, man.
I want to set up my shop on Main Street and I don't want to give a shit about any of the other shops, what they're selling. Cause this is the kind of thing I sell. People want to see a JR on the thing. It's like, and if they don't, I don't give a shit.
Right.
Because I'm still just making my own shop.
Confidence.
Yeah, that's new to me. This is the confidence is new for me at all, and it's always on the verge of going away. it's always so close. But when I started to demand of myself, like to tell people what I wanted. I remember when I was working at the Arclight Theater years ago, a guy, a manager.
Did you give the speeches?
I gave the speeches. Yeah. It was the easiest job ever. You know, if you hear someone rambling on at one of those theaters, they don't have to do that. All they have to tell you is that the name of the movie and then that they'll be off to the side.
For those of you who don't know, Arclight, it's a theater where the employees come out in the beginning and do just a brief introduction to the movie. And
yeah, they just say, thanks for coming to Arclight.
Did you get nervous when you were giving those introductions?
No, I was doing stand-up. It was almost kind of great to have a script that I had to stick to, and I didn't have to get laughs.
Yeah, okay.
And I didn't want laughs, because I remember seeing a guy trying to get laughs once, and I was like, who the fuck? Who's getting in the way of my aviator? But I think if you just find, like, it's like you can just be creative. You can just find the thing that you like to do. You know, it's if you're finding yourself like, oh, I wish I did that, do it. Do it. Doesn't mean that you have to, like, it's like, oh, I wish I could like play guitar. Play guitar.
Right.
Doesn't mean you have to, like, playing guitar doesn't mean you have to have a band. Doesn't mean you have to go on tour. Doesn't mean you have to get a
you
record label.
Doesn't
mean, yeah, you don't.
And this is the problem of the ego, because the mind will tell you it fabricates. See, I look at it as a form of self-crucifixion, which is a ridiculous thing, you know, because you can't really crucify yourself. Because
that's true. Oh, you can get two nails in, but the third, that's where you're going to have the issue.
You need a friend.
Yeah.
You need a friend to crucify yourself. But so there's the thing that where you're at, and then there's the thing that your ego tells you where you should be, and that's the stretch of your arms on this ridiculous torture device that you've made for yourself. And for me, I've been stopped so many times in any kind of writing endeavor, anything at all, because I've been exposed to the great writers, and I'm thinking, well, you're no Dostoevsky, might as well give up. Yeah. what kind of crazy egomaniac thinks like that?
Yeah.
It's just make a thing, you know? This is the thing. Just let yourself give birth, you know?
Make stuff, not money.
Make stuff, not money, because otherwise you're going to be, you know, it's not fair to say because I've obviously never experienced it, but apparently labor is one of the most painful things to be in.
I've stubbed my toe, so I'd imagine it's pretty.
It's the worst, right? Yeah. Like when a woman's giving birth, they scream, they can't. In the same way, if you've got a baby in you, you got to get it out of your creative vagina, or you're gonna hurt for a long time.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter what the baby ends up looking like. Just get it out first. You'll feel better.
It's an itch to scratch. You know, I'll sometimes feel myself getting anxious, getting a bit depressed, and then I'll make like a little video with music and stuff like that for Instagram on my phone. Just something simple, you know, just like a scribble on a page.
Yes.
Or I'll get with my guitar and I'll sit at my laptop and I'll make a song that no one's ever going to hear.
Yeah.
But it's just that output. It's that outlet that I think a lot of people, you know, they say work out and they say meditate.
Yes.
But I think creativity is another thing inside your body that's like needs to get out, needs to be
Absolutely.
Released. It's, you know, someone's got to run to the factory and relieve that pressure.
It's a religion, really. It's a form of prayer, spirituality, contact with the divine, whatever you want to call it. This is what Alex and Allison Gray talk about. They have the most beautiful, they have a lot of beautiful things, but take the triangle, right?
Yeah.
So they were explaining to me, if you guys are listening, I'm sorry if I ruin this, which I probably will, but the top of the triangle is, the thing that gives inspiration. You call it whatever you want. Yeah. Your ancestors, God, you decide. That's the thing the idea comes from. Like what you said earlier, which is so beautiful, which is every idea starts off perfectly. And then when it comes out of your mouth, it's already a little mutated, right? So it's that place, right? So that's the top of the triangle. Then the first line goes down to the artist, the creator, right? That's the second part of it. And so then the bottom part of the triangle is the creator letting the thing out. And the third point is the observer.
Oh, wow.
And then the final connection is between the observer and the thing that gives inspiration again, because it's the feeling of happiness that comes, or the feeling that your transmission of the divine is given the person that it goes into.
Yeah.
And this is what you were talking about when you saw Mel Brooks, when you first saw Mystery Science Theater, you didn't realize that what was happening is that you were being exposed to the divine message in the form of comedy, and it drove you on a spiritual pilgrimage to Los Angeles, just like it did Moses and Noah and every single other great person who went and did a thing and it's insane to do. Yeah. And look what fucking happened.
Yeah. Well, it's like a lot of people, you know, the big question is like,
you're Moses.
I'm Moses.
I just turned you into Moses.
You just did.
Sorry.
I've parted many seas, the Pacific mainly. But the thing is, it's like, why do you do it? And I can't remember where this quote is. It's like, because if I don't, I'll fucking die.
Mm.
You know, it's like, I would just curl up in a ball if I didn't make stuff.
You know what it is, man? It's, you know, I do understand that quote. I feel like, though, it's more like, it's not that you're going to die. It's that you won't live.
That's a way more positive Duncan Trussell spin on that.
You just won't live. You won't get to feel that feeling. And there's just nothing like it. Now, I've diverted us a little bit from this cool story you're telling, which is that Chris,
Chris
Hardwick is working on Talk Soup.
No, it's called Web Soup. It was the G4 version where it was like, you know, Tosh.0 came out like a month after we did.
And you're working in a job that you don't really
just
Rotten Tomatoes.
Miserable.
And so you get an email.
You get an email and he says, hey, these guys like your videos, they want to meet with you. And I was like, I got this job for a year. How many episodes do you have? And he's like, right now, 6. I was like, 6, that's like, you know, that's nothing. Who knows? And he's like, yeah, I don't know. I can't tell you for sure if it'll get picked up. So I go and I meet with these guys, Brad Stevens and Boyd Vico, two of the funniest guys I've now ever met. And we just like start chatting and hanging out for like an hour and a half in a meeting, just joking around, and we're on the same level. And I'm like, well, thanks for meeting with me. And I wasn't going to take it. I kind of did it as a favor to Chris. And then they call me and they're like, and the guy's like, hey man, we really would like you to work with us. Like, you know, we like your sketches. We want you to make those sketches. We'll let you do whatever you want. I said, thanks man. I appreciate that. But like, you know, I just went through this breakup and I got to get my shit together. I'm 25 or 4 at the time, thinking that I'm supposed to be an adult and whatnot. And, he's like, hey, I totally get it. And then just started talking to me about my situation, my life, not trying to convince me, but just, he's like, hey, let's just talk about that. And we just talked about it for a while. And then I like spent about a week and then they called me back. They're like, well, what do you think? And I said, I'll do it. And that scary jump away from money, away from everything that I thought would get my ex-girlfriend back, everything that I thought I was like supposed to be doing. When I made that break, I just decided to start doing things because I wanted to do them, not because I felt I had to. And it's like, and I've gotten into some like, you know, weird things with like Chris over the years. Since, I mean, we've worked together a bunch. We started that podcast, which led to you know, we doing the podcast, which led to having eventually Mel Brooks on and Weird Al on, and, yeah. and then eventually Joel Hodgson. And me and Joel Hodgson like really got along in the podcast. And then I ended up running into him at a Wayne White art show the next night. And then I saw him at Harmontown the next
night. What if you didn't go to the Wayne White art show?
I don't know. I don't know if he would have, like it was something about going to that Wayne White art show, which he had just put out that documentary, Beauty is Embarrassing, which is all about just the artist's lifestyle. And I was like obsessed with it. And I was obsessed with him. And then just like, you know, I was like, you know, I haven't been out to like a comedy show and like that wasn't mine in a long time. I'm going to go to Harmontown tonight. And Joel was there. And Joel's like, hey, man, yeah, you're from the, you know, and then a couple weeks later, I'm working on The Soup. This is, you know, years later, I'm working on The Soup. Also miserable again.
When is this?
This is about over 3.5 years ago.
So 3.5 years ago, okay.
Yeah, and that's like he just calls me. Joel just calls me and he's like, hey, that was really cool meeting you. I was like, and then we just started chatting, just talking as friends. And then he's like, all right, man, well, yeah, I'll talk to you later. And then call me a couple months later just to chat again. And I'm just like, intense. Fucking Joel Hodgson's just calling me to chat. This
he
is
just
great.
He called you up? Just what were you doing?
I was at work and I just walked out of the building and chatted with him for a while.
What'd you guys talk about?
Just comedy. And he was telling me stories about when he shared a space with Husker Du in Minneapolis. Wow. You know, he was like making props for a stand-up and they would be like, you know, making a metal circus. And then he was just, you know, just stuff and about how...
Christ, how happy were you after that phone call?
That would have been enough. That would have been enough. If that was all I had as an attachment to Mystery Science Theater, that would have been enough. And then he's like, yeah, you know, I've been thinking about maybe trying to bring it back, man. And I'll be like, yeah, I'll do anything. He's like, yeah, maybe like you can help, you know, with some riffs. And I was like, anything.
Wow.
And if, you know, months later, yeah, man, I'm still thinking about bringing it back. It's like, I don't know, I think maybe you could be like, you know, a producer on it or something like that. Maybe, like, I was like, anything. And then, you know, a year and a half later, he's like, yeah, you know, still thinking about bringing it back. I just realized, but you should be the guy, man.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
I said, what? And he's like, you know, the guy. I'm like, which guy? Which guy? And he's like, the Mike. You should be the new Mike. You should be the new human.
God.
And I was just like, Joel, I don't know if you know this, but this is kind of what I've always wanted. And he's like, oh, really, man? That's
like,
cool.
Like he didn't
Yeah. And so, and even today, before I came over here, the Riff Tracks guys, because we're doing this big Mystery Science Theater Riff Tracks reunion in Minneapolis in July. And it's like a huge reunion. Everyone's going to be riffing on movies and shorts. Like, it's going to be a huge thing. And the Riff Tracks guys made a shirt. And it's like one of those ampersand shirts where it's a bunch of people's names.
Yes.
And they made one, and it made me like tear up when I saw it. And I was just kind of, I couldn't handle it, but it says, Mike and Kevin and Bill and Joel and Trace and Frank and Bridget and Mary Jo and Jonah.
Wow.
Yeah. Those are all the people I watched growing up, and like, you know, it's crazy.
The ultimate manifestation of your will flowering into the world. But you know what, man? It's still, you still got to make the show.
That's where I'm at right now. Like the hard work of making, like riffing on these movies, these terrible movies.
Where are you? We only have about 8 minutes left because I know you got to go. But where are you? Where are you finding? I just have a few questions about.
Oh, Mr. yeah. No, please.
The development, which is. Mainly, where are you getting movies now? Because it seems like by now, not that you can exhaust the shitty movies of the world, but aren't the choice shitty movies gone? Where are you?
You think so? Like, there's these things that I've kind of heard about that we're working on. I can't really name any of them yet.
Right.
Joe wants them to be a surprise. But you know, there's your weird Korean monster movies that you never heard of. Because sure. I never heard of Gamera before.
Yeah, I know that Kim Jong Il. Has his own monster movie.
Oh, does he? I mean, these are all still from the same era. These are all still from the old, like, Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, Kim Jong-il, there's a famous story about how he had, I believe, a director and an actress kidnapped and brought to North Korea to make a monster movie. You could look at pieces of it on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
They made, like, a Godzilla movie or something.
Oh, yeah.
But so, okay, so, yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, but like they have, you know, they're working because Shout Factory is there, and the Shout Factory is all about old movie libraries, and they got together with MGM, and like, it's like, so there's like, these are quality, cheesy, crappy movies These and you know, with that, it's like you think it's so easy. I thought it was going to be so fun, and you're just raking riffs. Then you realize you're not just hanging out with your friends. You can't just go, "This sucks." You can't just say that on the third 10-second guy walking across the field shot in the past 5 minutes, because you made a good joke the first time. You kind of had a song to sing for him the second time, and now the third time you're just like,
"What do we do?
Here we go again with the walking." And across the field.
All those little characters they take on during the show, and
during
like
the voices of the people,
the callbacks, and the evolving jokes that happen throughout the course of the whole show.
Yeah,
and mixed in with the sketches in between.
Those are really fun. Like reading those it was a trip. Just you know, like the invention exchange is back, and just seeing that I'm gonna like be presenting an invention exchange to you know some mad scientists, and it's all practical still. And there's like, but we are expanding.
That's good that it's practical.
Yeah,
that's a relief, man. Yeah. It's gotta be. I mean, how are you gonna CGI that anyway?
No, exactly. It just looked bad. And there are, I'm sure there will be elements like you know green screen that they also had back in the day. But you know, it's like it's a lot mostly practical. And I've been seeing some of the designs for the sets and the people that are working on it. It's just,
what is this airing on?
We don't know yet. It's the deal's still being done. And it's going to be good though. And I think everyone's going to have a chance to, see it easily.
That's good news for all of us, man.
Yeah, I know.
Minus all the goddamn commercials. That's one thing I remember about it. The
makes
one
it
thing that
long.
Drove me crazy was there seemed to be so many commercials.
Because you got them at like between the host segments, and then you got them in the middle of the movie.
Yes.
And then yeah,
it
just
was between the host segment commercials.
Yeah.
That were the most infuriating.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
You'd be into the movie, and then those
you're
things
out. Yeah.
Pop
so
up.
That's yeah. Hopefully, it gets to a place where that won't be an issue. And yeah, it's just, it's really cool and it's tough. And, but like, you know, there's so many great people working on it. You know, Tammy Golden is writing on it and she's so funny. And, Matt Oswalt, Patton's brother is like, he's like just so dark and twisted on it.
Wow.
You got just, you know, Baron Vaughn as the voice of Tom Servo, who's so great.
Oh, and, cool.
Yeah. Hampton Yount
cool.
is Crow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Now, how many times this is unfortunately, I know a question that I've actually heard asked before about the show, but I don't remember the answer. How many times are you watching these movies in a row?
It's kind of hard. It depends on the person and depends on like who you're working with, but, you kind of just trudge through it, like 10 minutes at a time. So that way it doesn't get overwhelming, because then you could really just focus on jokes.
And have you shot any episodes yet?
No, we're gonna start shooting probably in September.
Oh wow, okay, lots of time. So now, do you when you're shooting an episode, I guess you guys have scripts sitting there, right?
Yeah, that's how they did it originally. It's like you know they have the silhouette, and you know now with the silhouettes, there are gonna be a little like digital things, like you know. Servo this whole time has had a hover skirt that hasn't worked. So Servo's going to be able to like hover around the screen now and interact with like sexy robots.
Cool, man.
And you know, Crow can like climb around and, you know, point stuff out. And we're doing a lot of kind of fun stuff with that.
That's cool.
Since it's like, you know, we'll have the ability to,
I bet there's people listening who are like, no.
Yeah, I'm sure there are, but this is coming from like a fan of the show.
Yes.
It's nothing that they wouldn't have gotten to if they remained on the air.
Right.
It's nothing like.
Why didn't they remain on the air? What happened?
Because sci-fi sucks. Like they picked them up and then they just booted them. I remember I was so devastated. But
isn't it sci-fi now? I don't.
Sci-fi. Sci-fi.
I remember pronouncing it like no. It's sci-fi or something.
Whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I don't like the fact that they do those Sharknado movies.
Those
like,
are annoying.
I don't like the idea of something bad on purpose. It's like you know, and you get it made. You know, just try.
Right.
Try something.
Try to make something good. It'll be a lot worse.
Yeah.
Than trying to make something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Man, so let's, because we have 4 minutes, so let's just, I'm sorry guys, I know normally we're not on a schedule, but Jonah's busy, obviously.
I didn't mean to, but also like, you know. What do I got?
I just wanted to ask you, do you have any extra time at all? We don't have time.
We got a half an hour. Essentially.
Oh, great.
3 o'clock is when.
Good, because I could just get sort of
back. You can relax. You sit back.
We got 3 minutes. I put poison in your water.
Oh.
I'm saying you have 3 minutes before
I've worked up a tolerance to Iocane powder, so I'm going to be okay.
Cool. So you had a pilot for Comedy Central called Jonah's Arcade.
Yeah.
It didn't go.
No, I'm glad.
But what was the premise of that?
Maddie Kirsch, who's a really awesome,
I know Maddie.
Yeah, like very excitable man.
Yes.
And he is a video game guy.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a video game guy. And, you know, I kind of had a nice meeting, a general meeting with Comedy Central, and they were developing, they wanted to try and figure out a video game themed show.
Right.
With Maddie. And then so they kind of they're like, hey, are you into video games? And I didn't say yes. I said, what does it look like?
That's good.
And so, you know, me and Maddie got together and with our friend Paul Bonanno, who was also like edited and helped produce on Hidden America.
Yeah.
We developed this idea for a show, and we also brought in Brad and Boyd, those guys from Web Soup. You know, I just wanted to work with all my friends. That's all I ever want to do.
Why aren't you into video? The only reason I asked is because I thought we'd be able to talk about video games a second. Why are you into video games?
Because I watch movies.
Jonah, you got to get into video games.
All my friends love video games. Like I hang out with Kumail. Like it's like Kumail, that should have been his show, and that's why I hired him as a writer and a sketch performer on the show. I don't know. It's what happened. I had a real bad run with video games.
Yeah.
When all the handhelds came out, my mom was like, "Do you want a Game Boy?" I said, "No, I want the Atari Lynx. It has a color screen and it has California games on it."
Okay.
Then
California games.
It was my favorite game. After that was the Super Nintendo, safe. Good, 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 good. I was fine with that. And then the next level came up and they're like, do you want a PlayStation? I said, no, I want a Panasonic 3DO.
Oh my God.
And of course, Panasonic 3DO, like, you know, kicked the bucket pretty, pretty fast after that. And then they're like, okay, for this Christmas, did you want any consoles, any video game consoles? I was like, okay. I want, they're like, the Nintendo 64. I was like, no, Sega Saturn.
No way.
Yeah. And I just chose poorly every time. And
weirdly, if you'd saved those consoles, you'd probably be able to sell them for hundreds of thousands. Your instincts were right in the wrong way.
I know. I'm just surprised I never got a TurboGrafx-16.
I did.
Yay!
And it broke like within the first few days.
Yeah,
man.
Those things fucking broke. My friend had one.
Damn it, that piece of shit, man. It was so good. I was so excited to have it. And then a few days later. Anyway.
Yeah. So I was living on my own by that time and couldn't afford, and I was afraid to like invest any money that I didn't have into a game console and video games and stuff like that. And I just kind of, and I was broke for a long time and I couldn't afford games. And
anyway, just think about it. Dark Souls 3 is one of the craziest games I've ever encountered. It's so beautiful, but we can't talk about it.
I have a comic show at a comic book store. You don't think I hear about Dark Souls 3?
Dive in, man. We need you. Praise the sun. Now, very quickly, let's just talk about how people can watch Hidden America and when it's going to come out so that people can check it out.
So June 2nd, all episodes are going to be available. Fake Travel Show, director of Mr.